best thing I saw about the election today. I showed it to you already. I'm driving in. You know the plastic surgery center in Dallas, there, the Renaissance Center?
Yeah.
Their sign literally reads this morning, Godspeed Donald. So here's a surprise, right? Plastic surgeons in with Trump.
Yeah.
I love
also,
it. And I love it's the
didn't
Godspeed
see that
Donald.
Apparently, like, also, We Do Metal Roofs is in with
that.
Trump because they had like eight signs down Memorial Highway.
Yes.
There was someone's house like
we,
that.
We Do Metal Roofs supports Trump. And I'm like, did you, like eight signs?
Those,
like,
have, been
they
for,
would be like
those
10,
have been up for months.
I just noticed them for the first time today.
There was one on the exit off of 81 right there.
Oh, yeah. But just like on Memorial Highway, like there were like eight of them like 10 feet apart. I'm like,
Not in
NEPA. Yeah.
But still,
exactly.
Like, there's still enough that, like, you know, why
exactly.
Be Switzerland.
In Philadelphia,
you know?
You're probably
you
right.
You own the business. You
here,
vote.
You're probably gaining customers.
Like,
oh, you're a horrible racist, too.
Sweet.
You must make a good roof.
I'll bring my, I want to be my General Lee to get fixed by that.
I want my roof only made by racists.
Yes. Welcome back to Even More Mashed Up, a podcast featuring two professors talking about all things pop culture. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Alan. And today, it's election day.
Yes.
So
did you vote?
I did vote this morning up at – I was in line at 6:50.
Yeah, well done.
Done by 7:15. Did my duty. Have you voted?
I have not.
That's not good.
I'm going to do it after the podcast.
That's better. Yep. That's better. So today we thought if it's election day –
yes.
We should do a show about elections and politics and pop culture.
We should, but not about the current political climate.
Not much,
not
anyway.
Not much, yeah.
No.
We figure people might need a bit of a distraction.
Right. So how about, like, politics and pop culture? Let's talk about, like, the best political movies.
Yes. Or let's talk about sort of the best patriotic superheroes.
Right. Or the politics and superhero movies.
Yes.
These are all topics that could show up on today's program.
Yes. Potentially.
Maybe not in that
Who
order.
Who knows? It's a surprise.
You never know what's coming.
Yeah. That's largely because we don't do a good job of setting up what we're doing.
Exactly. And you did give them out of order. So we're already kind of misled.
I couldn't remember what the second topic
was. The many fans.
Like, I know we're doing something else. I can't remember what it is.
That's good. Good. Oh, and by the way, Richard's here too.
I am. Yeah. Why? Thank you.
Yes,
you're welcome.
Introducing
me. We're only a minute in, and we remembered Richard.
That's better.
Which is better than most weeks.
It's good that we remember our plucky sidekick that way.
I wouldn't describe him as plucky.
No,
no,
no.
It'd be a lot. It'd be a lot more like a gadget kind of. Where like?
No, I'd say like a hard luck.
Sidekick. Oh, a sad sack sidekick.
Sad sack sidekick.
I mean, I prefer Alan's description more than the. Sad sack.
But Alan's going to like the...
Seems like Sad Sack's the winner, though.
Yeah, Alan's going to like the alliteration on that.
I do. I love alliteration.
Yeah, see, I know you
One
do.
Of my favorite Sad Sack
sidekick.
Pop culture politics.
Hashtag Sad Sack.
Wow.
We might need to come up with a different hashtag.
Can we start over again?
No.
All right.
No.
So, talk to me a little bit about, then, politics and film.
Politics and film, yes.
Yeah, you want to get started?
What was that?
Do you want to get us started?
I was, because you asked me to talk about it, and then I started talking... And then you felt the need to ask me if I wanted to start.
You looked puzzled.
Yeah,
you looked a little puzzled, so I thought,
was ready to jump in there.
You want to jump in now?
Yeah. Can I?
Please.
Thank you.
So what do you have to say? Yeah, go on. Please. If you're not going to take this show seriously, it's never going anywhere.
Hey, I took it very seriously because my research consisted of typing political films into Google, of which about 51 films came up.
Don't give away the magic.
Yeah.
You've just given away the entire magic.
So
now anybody can do this podcast.
Of the 51 films that came up,
yes,
I had seen a whopping 4 of them.
I was looking at the list of political films, and I had a feeling that you had not seen many of these.
I had not seen – I had seen 4. So I had to cast a slightly wider net. But I did talk about
a wider net by
seen.
Looking at films that aren't about politics, but you're going to pretend like they are.
No. I would not do that.
That is my strategy.
That would be kind of, you know, something I can't say on the podcast.
No, because this is a clean podcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, so the 4 movies that I had seen from the list were Wag the Dog.
That's what I haven't seen.
Oh, you didn't see that?
No, I should have.
I liked Wag the Dog.
I don't know, Dan. I don't know what happened.
I saw Wag the Dog.
Yep.
The American President.
Yeah. That one I skipped on purpose.
I liked The American President.
Of course you did.
I'll get into why later.
Of course.
V for Vendetta.
I didn't really consider that one, but that's a classic political film.
And then one that you know I have lots to say about.
Yes.
Frost Nixon.
Frost Nixon is one of my all-time favorites.
That movie is awful.
When I do? What?
I hate that movie.
Why?
You remember why.
I don't remember why.
The whole climax is based on a phone call Nixon makes to Frost in the show that did not happen in reality.
But it's a film. It's not supposed to be reality. Oh, are you one of these people that's like, so you're the, like, must be absolutely historically accurate?
No, but no, in a movie that, film that purported to be historically accurate for all but, like, 2% of its time.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you get this random fakery in it. Drives me nuts.
Phlebitis. That's what I remember from that film. He's got phlebitis.
Riddled with phlebitis.
Riddled with phlebitis.
Yes. That is our Nixon.
Good stuff.
Which for some reason I have to shake my head like
you
a
have to. You
got to
get those jowls. Like, I wish we were on film because you got to get the jowls shaking back and forth to do a good Nixon. Like, Nixon is totally in the jowls.
He's 90% jowl. That's
where you find your Nixon.
Yes.
I loved it because to me that's a film.
You find your Nixon.
Oh, Nixon is totally. You don't think so?
I'm just laughing at the phrase.
That's where you find. Maybe it's not the best phrase.
Yeah, that's where you find your.
Where you find your Nixon?
I keep mine in a closet.
I imagine now, like literally, the corpse in your closet. At home, you know,
hanging up next to the suits.
You're like, "Nobody let me out."
My corpse. I don't like it in here.
My corpse.
There's phlebitis. It's killing me. Oh. Yes, even more mashed up. Your place for highbrow political conversation.
Hey, are you feeling bad about the election?
Yeah, we will cheer you up with your nonsensical impressions.
See, here's what I loved about Frost Nixon.
Yes.
Was I think it captures the spirit of Nixon, right? Like you, and that's to me, like, that's what I want in a historical film. Like, I don't worry about whether they get the details right. What I care about is do they capture the spirit of the thing. And I think they captured the spirit of the thing just as well as you've captured him in your closet.
Yeah. I still that movie bugs me.
Well, there are three films I love.
Okay.
That are political films.
All right. Well,
seen none of them.
I've seen none of them, but I know I think at least one of them.
Yeah. So the one that's the classic choice everybody picks would be All the President's Men.
Right.
Right. It's Hoffman. It's Redford. Mm-hmm. It's two good-looking guys doing good work.
Like, kind of like the podcast. Boom.
Yeah, I think you would be the Hoffman. And I would be the Redford. No?
I have no argument against that.
Yeah. Which in Dick would make me Will Ferrell and you McCulloch. Bruce McCulloch? Yeah, Bruce.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So I love the film. Mm-hmm. It's a really well-made film. But what I don't like about the film is what makes the other two films great.
Okay.
Because All the President's Men kind of argues, right? Just not along as if you've seen it.
Totally.
That Nixon was corrupt.
This is me nodding.
Yeah. But the system still worked.
Yep.
Right? Because two intrepid reporters go about exposing malfeasance and bring Nixon to justice.
No need to change the system.
Right.
Just bad apples.
Right. Nixon, bad apple. The two films that are my all-time favorite political films totally expose that one.
I know one of them.
The first is Dick.
Yes.
Starring Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams, which turns Watergate into absolute farce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is... It also, by the way, Dan Hedaya does a great Nixon.
As good as mine?
Another great Nixon. Better than yours.
Wow, that's hard to imagine.
It's good. In that film, you have to imagine what Nixon would be like if he were high on pot cookies.
Nah.
Like, that's kind of where his paranoia. It's a brilliant, brilliant satire. And the other is Bob Roberts.
Oh, that was not what I was expecting.
No, which is perfectly appropriate for Pennsylvania. Richard, you know. Because nobody's seen Bob Roberts in this
film? No. That was not the movie I was expecting you to talk about.
It's the Tim Robbins film. Where he plays the conservative folk singer from Pennsylvania. It's like a fake documentary.
I moved here a year ago. Why would
they call it a mockumentary? No? Nobody's seen this?
I vaguely remember it.
Oh, but the songs are so good. Tim Robbins never released the soundtrack
because
the songs are so hateful.
But
they're good. So, like, you watch the film and then you sing really racist, hateful things in your head for a week.
Okay. Yeah. How come Dr. Strangelove is not on your list?
I didn't really think of that as a political film, but if it's a political film, it's a war film.
It doesn't really touch on any kind of politics.
War films
in any
aren't
kind
political
way,
films?
Right?
Wait. How are war films not political films?
I guess they are, but I think of them
you
somehow.
Guess?
Separate. I'll
concede for the heck
so,
of
like,
it.
So, like, no, but like, so do you have Bridge Over the River Kwai on your list?
No, because I haven't seen that.
But you wouldn't put it on a political list film.
I might.
I mean, it's
well,
about
you would because you've only seen four films.
I got to fill out my list somehow.
Yeah. So to me, Dick and Bob Roberts are two films that say no. It's not individuals that are bad; it's the system.
Okay.
That's rotten. I think it really speaks to people who came of age when I did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Gen Xers who feel like the system is just fundamentally broken. Why is Dan laughing at Gen Xers?
I think he's maybe laughing at the idea of you as a Gen Xer.
Really?
That's no, totally.
Well, you're clearly a millennial.
No. Well, I look like a millennial.
You try very hard to look
like
one.
But I have a Generation X sensibility.
So you fail at both counts.
Yeah, that's how I think of you.
Well, Richard would be the expert at failure, so.
I would. I watch it every Monday.
Oh, I thought he was going to, like, look it in the mirror every day.
Yeah.
that's where I thought he was going.
I stopped myself.
So I've got a list of other films that I thought you might want to comment
on.
But
I could talk about the other films that I listed.
Now that you've seen none.
No, I've seen others. I've seen V for Vendetta.
Yes.
So the sort of adaptation of the classic graphic novel by Alan Moore.
Right.
So, which was what I find very interesting about V for Vendetta is that, you know, the graphic novel was written and is very much a critique of the Reagan-Thatcher era.
Right.
And what they did with the film is they sort of updated it in ways to speak to sort of a more post 9/11 contemporary political situation.
Yeah.
Right.
So that, for example, the voice of London is sort of a Rush Limbaugh, Fox News sort of pundit.
Right. Right. For sure. But, like, that's the depressing thing about films like this to me is, like, Bob Roberts was made late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of focuses on Gulf War I is kind of like the political event that's going on in the middle of the election. But whenever I show it to students, it's still super relevant. Like, mm-hmm. You know, like 15, 20 years later, it's still like right on the nose.
Yeah.
Oh, you feel like history is sort of repeating itself.
I really hate it when people say, well, history just repeats itself. But I think we haven't escaped that era yet. Yeah. Yeah. So I wouldn't say repeating necessarily, but like the problems that we had then are problems we haven't.
So would you say that history then versus history now is somewhat undifferentiated?
A block of it, at least?
In ways that there's not a lot of difference between, say,
it's been then and now. 15 years. Yeah. Like,
a good block
like
of time.
If you guys are looking for big changes every 15 years, you're probably going to be disappointed.
But we have that in technology. We have that
in
other aspects of a life. Why not in politics?
So why not history and politics, too?
Yep.
It's hard to argue against that logic.
I'm pretty sure history changes, like, pretty much every, what, like, 7.5 years?
Something like that.
And that's something like something that. Like so that. We should see like at least a couple cycles within 15 years.
I liked Viva Vendetta. It was not my favorite film.
Yeah.
No, it was okay.
It was good. Now, why do you hate The American President? Because The American President is, of course, like the test run for The West Wing, which was one of the greatest political shows ever.
Yeah. You know, I never saw The American President, so my hate might be a little misplaced.
Okay.
But I was never a big Douglas fan.
Okay.
And it just seemed like a sappy rom-com.
It very much is. I mean, it's interesting is it shows up on lists of best political film and lists of best romantic comedies. So it is. And I'm not sure Annette Bening's character comes off as all that sort of strong a character.
That was a surprise.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did sort of give us a test run for The West Wing.
Yeah. Now, if we want to do Dr. Strangelove, like the, you know, President Muffley might be the greatest character. Average. You don't know any.
I haven't seen. You're
no point in talking about this,
except that it is your favorite movie
whatsoever. It is. Yeah. It is the greatest movie ever made. I think that's pretty much inarguable.
I would argue that.
Really?
Yeah.
Having not seen it,
South Park the movie.
South Park the movie is so good. And that's on my list of best political films.
I'm not surprised.
South Park
to me
the movie
at all.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's about the politics of censorship.
Can we talk about?
Is it?
Yes.
Can we talk about like real political films? Or do you want to just...
That silence answers your question.
I actually have some very real political films on my list.
Do you want to go through the Boston.com list of top 10 real
quickly?
Oh,
do you have a list? Yes.
I do.
I bet you I've not seen any of these.
Number 10.
Yes.
Primary Colors.
Not seen it.
It was a terrible film.
Worked at Barnes & Noble when the book came out.
Nobody's seen it. All right, so we can't talk. It was terrible. Number 9, Dave.
Nope, I haven't seen it.
It was a dumb movie.
But that's the one where What's-His-Face pretends to be the president because he looks like him?
No.
That's the one with Sigourney Weaver and Kevin Kline.
Oh, the president's a jerk, but if we just replace him with, you know, a good folksy guy, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because it's the same problem as all the president's men. Like, it's just one guy that's bad. Hmm. All we need is some average Joe off the street. It'll be fine. Yeah.
All right, let's move to this list because I've got more to say.
All right, next was Wag the Dog, then the American President.
Whoa. Why are we skipping over the movies that I've seen?
Because we've already talked about Wag the Dog.
In the sense that you said you haven't seen it.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do we have more?
Okay. No, I'm agreeing with you that we're
talk
done.
To me about Wag the Dog. politics of pets.
What? No, that's not what it's about. Do you not even know the premise of the movie?
I do. There's a scandal that involves sex and that they have to create like a foreign policy.
They create a fake war
to cover up.
To distract, yeah. And it sort of shows kind of the overlap between sort of politics and fiction, politics and Hollywood, sort of showing how they're kind of ultimately the same thing.
I know I should have seen that film because I think politically it's right on the nose.
Yeah, I think
it should be.
I think you would like it because it very much sort of, I think, exposes sort of the system and the systems as corrupt.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Vote third party. So number six on the list, Black Sheep.
I've not seen that one.
It's the David Spade, Chris Farley film.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, how did that make the list?
I mean, it's not.
Is that the one with, like, the embarrassing, like, president's brother or something?
Not the president, but his brother's running for some kind of office.
Okay.
And so they have to hide Chris Farley, and that's David Spade's job.
Yeah.
I've seen it on cable.
It's a good film, but
so it's basically like who is the embarrassing Carter brother?
Billy.
It's basically Billy Carter story.
Man, you know what? You know what would be good for an election-watching party tonight? Billy Beer. Maybe we can get some. Is there any Billy Beer local?
Maybe not. Probably not. Maybe right. Big Lots?
Yeah. David
Next
Spade.
To the Shasta.
David Spade shouldn't be on the list, right?
No, that, yeah.
All right. Five, The Manchurian Candidate.
Could you talk with your hand over your mouth more? Because I think that makes it sound really good.
I think I'm allergic to the studio.
Okay. Is that the original Manchurian Candidate or the remake?
Everybody considers the original much better.
Okay.
I skipped the remake because, like, why would you remake The Manchurian Candidate? Yeah. Napoleon Dynamite was number four.
I did not care for Napoleon Dynamite.
I didn't either. The appeal of Napoleon Dynamite.
So we're talking about, like, high school politics there because isn't someone running? Yeah, vote
yes,
for Pedro.
Pedro. Yeah.
It's not really talking about politics. It's just like a subplot.
This feels like someone wanted to put together a list but also didn't want to just have, like, classic political films
it's
on
it's trying
it.
To be too clever.
Yeah.
Because number two, classic, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
You have to love that film, right? Capra is...
I haven't seen it.
Of course not. yeah. He's not seen anything that he should have seen.
Yeah.
Number two was Election.
I really want to see that.
That was the Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah. That one looked really funny.
You know, like,
it's
it wasn't
David
as funny as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Got a little nasty by the end.
Yeah, it's Mammoth, so there's going to be some nastiness in there.
And then number one was All the President's Men.
Okay.
But there were a bunch of Missed the Cut that I thought we ought to talk about quickly.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll talk about your list.
Sure.
And we'll move on. Fog of War. Robert McNamara talking about his mistakes in Vietnam. No?
No.
Wow, this room is cold today.
It is.
How about 13 Days?
13 Days.
The Kevin Costner film? Cuban That's, Missile Crisis?
I that one.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
Costner's actually made two.
JFK. He was in JFK.
Oh, yeah. And JFK. And he was in Swing Vote.
Swing Vote.
That's the film where he's the guy whose vote didn't get counted and whoever he votes for wins the presidency.
Because that's how the election system works.
Yep. Yep.
So it turns out Costner's made no good ones. But it does get me to the best impression I can do.
Which
you guys won't appreciate it because nobody's seen 13 Days.
No.
Costner has to do a Boston accent.
Oh, Lord. Please
and he catches his son trying to hide his report card.
Please don't.
And the line goes like this. Hi, that's my report card.
You sounded more Southern than Bostonian.
But that's the point. Costner totally botches it. Like, the guy can't do accents.
That's
hilarious,
having absolutely no context for why it's hilarious.
Yeah. You know what? I'm done.
Okay. So can we talk about the original Star Trek movies?
No.
Do we have to?
Well, they're political.
Of course they are.
Come on. The Undiscovered Country, which is all about the demise of the Cold War.
Is that the original Star Trek film?
Star Trek VI. I meant the original
films. I
thought
the original Star Trek film was like Star Trek I.
No, I meant like
the
original
the original
cast.
Was number six.
The original cast.
Oh, here we go. Let's do something original. Number six.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it was brand new after the television series.
Yes.
And five movies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Undiscovered Country.
The original one.
Which was about the demise of the Cold War.
Yeah, but it was a terrible film.
No,
I've never been able to watch it from
start to finish. The even-numbered ones are the good ones.
I've never been able to watch it from start to finish.
No, Undiscovered Country's pretty good.
Which one's Khan?
That's two.
Okay. Which number one? Is that where they take on V'ger?
It's only called the motion. It's Star Trek the Motion Picture. Yeah. It wasn't numbered.
Is that where Voyager's gone bad?
Haven't seen that one.
Oh, okay.
Because it looks interminably dull.
Well, that's probably why you think number six is the original.
So wait, no, I meant like the original run of Star Trek films.
It's original to me.
I meant the original run of Star Trek films. But yeah, it's sort of, you know, the Federation and the Klingon sort of have to declare peace. Kirk sort of finds himself at odds with peace, being sort of the original Cold Warrior. He has his opposite number in General Chang of the Klingons, who also refuses to.
The Klingon is General Chang?
Yes.
There's a surprise. Pretty sure.
Yep, Chang.
Good. Racial politics loaded into
this. So Star Trek The Undiscovered. And then, of course,
yes,
there is Star Trek IV, A Voyage Home.
Didn't see that one either.
That's the one about the whales.
Oh, yeah. You didn't see that one? Like an environmental politics?
Yeah, it's an environmental politics film. Yeah,
yes, because, it's very subtle.
Because we have wiped out the whales, when random probe comes looking to talk to the whales, Earth is endangered. So we have to go back in time get the whales.
Question. Why didn't they just have technology that could remake what the whales sounded like?
I don't know, because they...
Like, they don't have recordings of whales?
No, apparently not. Okay. Did not record. They lost the whales and the recordings.
Apparently.
All of it's gone.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm pretty sure the probe would realize it was fake whale sounds. They needed genuine, authentic whale sounds.
We can send massive starships to space, but we can't fake whales.
Not to the alien probe.
Yep. I bet you have a whale impression, though.
Not really.
No?
Nope, that's not it.
No,
that was more of like a dying dolphin.
It was. But dolphins are kind of like whales.
No.
They're in the ocean.
They're both fishes.
They're in the ocean.
Fishes.
Whales are, I think they're mammals actually.
As are dolphins.
They swim. They're fishes. Don't fishes swim?
Fish got to swim. Bears got to eat. I don't know what it is.
It feels like we may have exhausted the topic of politics and film.
No, I still got other ones.
Oh, good.
Wait, is there any, I know the Civil War is sort of like a political, is there any actual like,
we're going to get to the Marvel.
Well,
we're going to do
the superheroes in a minute.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How about Starship Troopers?
I didn't see that film.
From 1997, Paul Verhoeven's follow-up to like Basic
Instinct?
No,
I could see that being political, yeah.
So,
the follow-up to Basic Instinct.
I think it was. Or maybe there was something in between. But it was during his heyday, like Basic Instinct. Like the 90s were Paul Verhoeven
day. I could see Starship
Troopers,
complex,
where I read one review that said, you know, the point of this film is that war makes fascists of us all.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's
but smart. Having watched the film, I would point out they were pretty much all fascist to begin with.
Yeah. Like,
is.
Yeah.
The war did not.
Yeah, they were.
A lot of 90s nuance.
No.
Well, you must have Avatar on your list then.
I've never seen Avatar.
Oh, these are only films you've seen.
Yeah, these are films that I've seen. Pan's Labyrinth was another one that I had on.
That one I've not seen.
Another great political film.
If Avatar's on the list, that means Pocahontas makes it cut too, right?
On his list, I'm assuming Pocahontas is there.
No, not on the list.
Really? Because I would have Richard do some lyrical analysis.
I went more sci-fi than anything else. So sort of science fiction. But yeah, Pan's Labyrinth, a great political film.
The river's never the same place twice.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm told.
Yeah, whatever.
Go on. Pan's Labyrinth.
No, yeah, Pan's Labyrinth. Really?
Yeah.
Well, now you know how I felt for the first 20 minutes of the podcast when you were waxing rhapsodic on your list of films that nobody else in the room had seen.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you not like that?
Yeah. Would you just keep reading the list?
Are you sad?
I'm not sad.
Are you feeling bad about yourself?
I'm disappointed.
How about Hunger Games? That is something we have seen.
Yes.
Hunger Games is a political film.
I didn't see the end of it. I've not seen the last.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how it ends.
It ends somewhat ambiguously.
Really?
Yes.
I'm disappointed. That's not what I expect from my Hollywood pop culture.
Yeah. Do you want me to spoil the ending for you and our audience?
I'm not going to watch it.
Okay.
So go.
Oh, so basically—
I'm not going to watch it, so you can spoil it.
I can spoil it. Okay, good. Yeah. So basically, they overthrow President Snow, and they trot him out for like a execution, and Katniss is the one that's supposed to execute him by shooting him with an arrow. And instead, she shoots coin, I think, the new president, because she discovers that the whole a bombing that killed her sister that everyone thinks was Snow was actually her.
Yeah. More importantly, who does Katniss end up with?
No one.
Good for her.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were two.
Well, then you do flash forward to her and Peeta having kids, so she does end up with
Peeta. No, with Peeta?
I forgot about that. She does end up with Peeta. She rejects What's-His-Face because he was the one that originally came up with the idea of the bombing plan. He didn't know it was going to be used in such a way, but she sort of blames him for that.
That's too much politics for me.
So, on the political episode, too much politics.
Yes.
Okay.
We've been doing it for 23 minutes already.
Yeah, I'm overloaded.
So should we move on to something that we can actually talk about?
Why don't we? Something we've actually both seen?
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
That might make for a better show.
It possibly. How could the show get better?
That's a good question. So should we talk about politics and superhero films?
I think we should.
All right, if you're going to do that, you got to start with DC.
No, you don't got to start with DC.
You do have to start with DC.
I don't think you do.
I believe you do.
Okay, if you say so.
They are the reactionary force in pop culture that Marvel has to act against.
Okay.
No?
I'm not sure. I see the DC films, with the exception of Dark Knight, as kind of profoundly apolitical. I think that's part of the problem.
Well, but Man of Steel
and Dark Knight.
But Man of Steel still gives you sort of the irrationally violent bad guy.
It does.
Right, who's bad just because he's bad.
Right, but not in the way that you know, you see it in other films. It's not like the Joker in The Dark Knight, who is literally called a terrorist because of his so-called irrational badness.
Right. But even better, if we're going to talk about the Joker, right, is the way in which he stands in for sort of this really superficial understanding of terrorism in the United States, right? He's a terrorist. Why? Because he's labeled that. What I love about the Joker is...
And because he wants to watch the world burn.
Right. You never...
Supposedly. I mean, again, you know, someone else tells him that. He never says it.
Well, Alfred says that. But what he says is that he's like a dog chasing cars. He wouldn't know what to do if he ever caught a car, right? Which is kind of an irrational... approach to the world, one might argue. But what I love even more about the way Nolan presents the Joker is that you never know where he comes from, right? Like, he tells different origin stories.
We don't know his origin
throughout the film.
In general,
like, was it his dad? Was it
the Joker in general is always usually portrayed as that. Like, even...
Well, I think there's a reason why Heath Ledger's Joker resonated, though, right? Yeah. Like, he's a character that very much fits with the way that Americans want to think about terrorism, right? Like, it's simple enough to know that there are bad men who kill people to steal rubies.
Right.
And then hand them to little kids to play with.
Yeah. They're bad just because they want to do bad things.
Right, like, because they're inherently bad. Which, of course, absolves us from any guilt or complicity for the world in which we live. Right. Like, we don't have any responsibility.
It's not our fault.
It's just bad people.
It makes us Batman.
Yeah.
Right. And
or Commissioner Gordon.
And Harvey Dent, in a way.
But then it justifies what Batman does.
Yep.
Right?
How would you describe what Batman does?
I would not describe it myself, but I once read an article where somebody described that what Batman does
was quoted as describing it this way.
In this article, yeah, that Batman replicates all the crimes of the Bush administration.
Yeah, that was something to the effect of this person.
Yep, extradition.
Yep.
Check. Torture.
Yes, though it should be pointed out, someone else pointed out the extradition point.
That's true. Electronic surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
Check. Like, he does all of the things that Americans did.
He does. But it's okay because he's Batman.
Well, but that's the point, right? Because the Joker is inherently evil, we have to compromise our values.
Right.
And we can trust Batman because we know he's inherently good.
Yes.
Well, he is us, right?
He'll only compromise our values so far.
Why would
he walk back from that line?
Why would anybody in the world not trust us? We're Batman.
We're Batman. Or Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. Maybe. Now, Bobby argues that Harvey Dent's the hero. Yeah, I think he's wrong.
Well, I think Harvey Dent could be like American.
Well, Harvey Dent is set up as the hero at the end of the film because they obscure the fact that
but
you know,
it's a
he became
fake
two-faced.
Hero. Like, that's the worst thing
about to the vast majority of Gothamites, Harvey Dent is the
hero.
He's
a model,
But isn't that the most offensive part of Batman is that the filmmakers say we can't trust the public with the truth. Right? The public can't handle that. Like, they can't handle – well, I shouldn't say that. They can't handle the truth, right? They if we let them know, like, the world will go to pieces. Like, it's an argument for lying to the public.
Well, but it's also a contradiction of the film itself because you have that whole scene on the ferry boat where Joker's point is to show that the public, you know, cannot make the right decision.
Right.
And then, of course, they do.
Right. Well, you can trust them to make that right decision, but you can't trust them to kind of understand the world, I guess. Like, if we put them into, like, a really contrived, stupid, you know, moral dilemma, they'll make the right choice. But we can't trust them to, like, oh, like, people aren't just good or bad, you know? Like, people are complicated. That's too much.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where DC starts. And I think you're right. Like, DC doesn't sort of glance as directly at politics
It's interesting kind
unless
of looking –
unless you talk about Bane.
Well – but yeah, but well, I mean, sort of setting aside the Dark Knight trilogy, like the current crop of DC movies, you know, Batman versus Superman, Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, all the ones that have come out since then. It's interesting to see the way in which that they're kind of replicating what went on with the comics and the birth of Marvel, which is that DC was the very sort of cookie cutter. You know, very conservative.
Politically safe.
Politically safe. You know, all the characters in the Justice League sound exactly the same. Like, there wasn't kind of that direct tie to kind of anything going on.
Well, that goes back to, like, the 50s anti-comics crusade and the way in which DC kind of hunkered down and said, like, we'll survive by creating these cookie-cutter, completely safe characters.
Right. And then you had the birth of Marvel, in which the comics were much more tied to things like, you know, the student movement and Vietnam.
Very much like a 60s
and race
ethos.
And things like that. And it seems to me that we've got kind of the same thing going on in the movie universes right now.
It seems like somebody ought to write an article about that at some point.
Yeah, someone could at some point.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening, I call dibs.
On the idea that I just described. Okay.
It's my research proposal. But anyway, yeah, I'm sure it's original to you somehow.
I'm pretty sure it probably came to me spontaneously.
Yes, spontaneously. Yeah. You're a hard man to work with sometimes. But you're arguing Marvel's different.
In some ways, but I also argue that, not to say that Marvel does a perfect job.
I agree.
With sort of the ways its films are tied into politics. And in particular, sort of, I mean, the different ways that the Marvel Universe is sort of born out of a post-9/11 sort of ethos. Because one of the things that drives me crazy about the Spider-Man franchise, both the Sam Raimi and the Andrew Garfield sort of reboots, is they very much sort of embrace a kind of jingoistic post-9/11 patriotism.
Agreed. But I don't think of them – clearly a Marvel character – but I was thinking more like sort of the Marvel in-house productions, right?
Right, but still,
have tried to be more attuned to politics.
Tried to be, but again, maybe not entirely successfully.
Well,
but
let's talk about that.
But I think, you know, I wanted to make my point.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I thought you had.
But sort of, it's interesting that you have the Spider-Man, like the scene in the first Spider-Man where you have all the New Yorkers sort of throwing the garbage at Green Goblin.
Right.
You know, you fight one of us, you fight all of us.
Indeed.
And then you have the scene in Spider-Man 2 on the subway.
Big flag at some point in Spider-Man.
Where he's running across the rooftop and there's the giant flag. You have the scene in Spider-Man 2 on the subway where he saves the subway, his mask comes off, and you know, everyone on the subway, you know, is a New Yorker, and so they're like, we'll protect your
secret. Don't they literally like raise him up and sort of pass him back in like this very communal,
very subtle Christ imagery there.
And
then they carry that over into the reboot with the scene in the first movie where you have all the crane workers sort of coming together to turn the crane so that Spider-Man can get up to the top of the Oscorp Tower.
You know,
like the Spider-Man films, regardless of producer, have been kind of based in a very kind of jingoistic sort of post-9/11 patriotism.
No, I totally agree. I think the in-house stuff has tried to do a better job of that, but I'm not always, like, convinced.
Right.
For example, like, you'd want to talk about Winter Soldier.
I would say Winter Soldier is the best of them.
Right. There's the great scene between Fury and Steve Rogers where Rogers says, like, this isn't freedom.
This is fear.
It's fear, right? And I think there's, like Marvel's clearly trying to say something, right? That Captain America, in this case, is standing up saying, hey, like, we shouldn't trade away sort of what we believe in our core ideals for this.
Or even just our civil liberties for some kind of a sense of freedom.
Right.
Although, for safety, I should say.
Ultimately, like, Hydra has infiltrated the government, right? So it's not – like, how big a critique is it of Americans,
this is,
right?
But this is the conversation you and I have had.
If it's Hydra that's doing it as opposed to, like, real Americans.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think
so it gives almost a scapegoat to it.
But I think what's important about Winter Soldier is it's not like in the movie Captain America lets S.H.I.E.L.D. off the hook. He doesn't say we have to root Hydra out. He says we have to burn it all down to the ground.
Right.
Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. have to go. And so the film ultimately does not let – you know, it's not the bad apple thing again for Captain America. It's that, you know, Hydra is there, but S.H.I.E.L.D. is sort of responsible for that as well.
Right.
And so the whole thing needs to be burned down
to
the ground. So I don't see I see it as probably about as – good a statement as we're going to get in this regard.
I agree with you. It's as good a statement as we're going to get in this regard. I think there is, like, a bit of misdirection still. Like, a bit of a dodge, a bit of, like, it's not totally. You know, like, it's a commercial enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, writing that critique sort of more boldly about American government and society probably.
Yeah, see, I don't see it as that much of a dodge really at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I mean, again, it would be a dodge, like, if they were just like, yeah, we've got to root out
Hydra
and keep S.H.I.E.L.D.
What if Hydra had never infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, then you're talking about a different movie.
Right. Agreed. But then S.H.I.E.L.D. would have been okay.
I don't know. It would, again, a totally, I mean, because, you know, Captain America is objected to Project Insight.
To me, that's the question, right?
Yeah. Like, prior to, but his objection is not based on.
But a more direct critique
right.
would be that we don't need Hydra
for S.H.I.E.L.D. to be.
Right, but Cap's argument is not based on the existence of Hydra.
No, I understand.
Cap's argument is just based on what he sees S.H.I.E.L.D. doing.
I understand. I get that. I understand that. But what I'm saying is, like, without Hydra, like, the film doesn't kind of happen. It's hard to imagine it happening.
Also, it would be a much more complex film because then Steve Rogers would be taking on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, or maybe S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which would be interesting.
Been.
Well, yeah, if you assume
that's my point.
They're going to keep Rogers straight, right, or consistent.
It would be more interesting.
Yeah. But I still think Winter Soldier is politically about as good as it gets.
I agree. I just don't think it's perfect.
It's not perfect, but I think it's pretty good.
Now, you know that I love Iron Man 3.
Yes.
Because of the way in which they play with the Mandarin.
Yes.
And use him as sort of, you know, the boogeyman that motivates a military industrial.
Oh, well, yeah. And also what they do with Mandarin I think is brilliant for kind of engaging but also avoiding the sort of racism of the Mandarin as he originally is.
Talking about racial politics,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Turning him into kind of a caricature.
Yeah.
Or literally a character.
Which in a way film. He always had been.
Yeah, I thought pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Pretty brilliant.
Iron Man 3 is in its take on the Mandarin, is really smart on a couple of
levels. That may be the only part I liked about the movie was that part, like that aspect of it.
And, you know, that's one of the few films where I didn't mind having a kid involved. I thought the Tony Stark kid relationship worked pretty well.
Well, because it left out pretty much the entire like sentimentalizing of
right.
Stark
yeah, it
and
was
the
a,
kid.
A very sort of Stark relationship.
Yeah,
I would say. Yeah, yeah. Although, like you hear rumors, right, that they're going to retcon the Mandarin.
I haven't heard rumors of that. I mean, there's always kind of that floating around. I mean, there was the one short that was on one of the DVDs that kind of set up that there is an actual Mandarin.
Right.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to bring the Mandarin. I don't think we're ever going
to
see that.
I hope they don't pursue it because to me, that take on the Mandarin was, for me, the best that Marvel's done.
Yeah.
Like that idea, I just thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
That was really smart.
Yeah.
But Smarter than Captain America arguing with Nick Fury, which was more pat, like more expected, like more easily done. I thought this was like a really kind of clever way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely clever.
It maybe
smart. Yeah.
Maybe a little more subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, we got 10 minutes. Do you have others to talk about?
We should talk about Age of Ultron.
Do we have to?
As another political film.
As a
the worst computer battling CGI I've ever seen.
But it does bring us aware of the dangers of artificial intelligence.
It does?
Yes.
Sure. It does show us the dangers of artificial intelligence.
But
I
also
agree.
Sort of more seriously, I would say Age of Ultron is a critique of the drone program in many ways, as is Ant-Man.
Right. I can
in
see that.
You know,
yeah.
Stark builds the Ultron program to create sort of that shield around the world that you're going to have these sort of automated Iron Man suits running around protecting everything, which I think it's the Bruce Banner character that says it sounds like a pretty cold world.
Yeah.
But then he helps.
But you kind of
still.
see the dangers of the drone program there.
Right. But I think it's more than the drone program that they're critiquing, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're critiquing this idea that politicians still sell us that we can feel safe, right? That we can live in an open democratic society and have 100% security.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can't. You make choices, you make trade-offs.
Right. Which again, you know, in the same way then, Age of Ultron is sort of showing a similar critique as Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Because they show the failure of that effort.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The helicarriers and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that all of that fails.
An appalling idea, right?
Yeah.
Appalling idea.
Yeah. That effort for complete and total safety is never going to work.
Right, no matter how much Americans want it.
Right.
Right.
And in some ways because we create Age of Ultron, because we create this thing, it becomes the danger.
How great would it be if instead of like having debates like we've had in this election cycle, we just had people watch and discuss the Marvel films? Like to talk about issues of security and the
kinds
of trade-offs.
I would like to know Trump's position on Ant-Man. Like what he thought of Ant-Man.
Ant-Man in particular?
Yeah.
Why Ant-Man?
Because it seemed funny in my head.
No, but you're missing the point. I don't want to have
just the right size of Ant-Man.
Either candidate tell me how to think about it.
Oh,
I just want to watch it and then sit around in small groups and talk about it.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, the candidates don't need to be involved.
No, I think we'd be better off if the candidates weren't involved.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah. Can we have an election without candidates?
No. Well, we kind of have an election without candidates this year.
That's my dream world.
Mm.
No, not this year. I meant the election without candidates for real.
Yeah, no, I mean,
this year has been a little less than dreamy.
Little bit.
Yeah.
So should we talk about patriotic superheroes?
Yeah, let's talk about patriotic superheroes.
Wrapping that up?
Yep.
Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with specific ones or kind of just the general idea?
Let's start with the general idea.
Okay.
Where do you think I come down on patriotic superheroes?
I'm pretty sure you hate them.
I thought I would hate patriotic superheroes.
You do, or you're a hypocrite, so take your pick. I'm going to have some coffee.
I found more that I could live with than I thought I would.
Okay. That shocks me.
Right? Like, patriotic superheroes did better than supernatural superheroes.
That is surprising.
Of which I could not find many.
I thought you would have just kind of a general overall, like, you would not like them at all.
No. Like, there's some I hate. Like, if you want to talk about the worst of the worst, Uncle Sam.
Oh, okay.
Like, he has got to be the most pretentious.
Of the freedom fighters?
Of the freedom fighters, you know, who draws his strength from, I don't know, like, the American landmass or the American spirit or.
Yeah, it's something
or
like
something.
That.
Like, it's. Yeah. Like, there's never been a good Uncle Sam.
No.
Never.
That's
like,
terrible.
He is the worst.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with it. Yeah, I've never cared for Uncle
terrible.
Sam.
You had others on your don't like list?
Am I don't like list?
Yeah.
Well, the ones I talked about, that I mean, it's not so much that I don't like them.
Uh-oh.
But they are, because I actually went a little bit outside of.
Oh, of course you did. Because when I go outside the rules, well, there's been some kind of terrible foul committed. But when you do it, creative thinking.
I didn't go outside of the rules.
Uh-huh.
I just went outside of America and looked at sort of non-American patriotic superheroes.
What a clever twist.
Yes, which are all almost universally terrible.
Well, that's not surprising.
Because my favorite, which I say ironically, is, of course, the Collective Man.
Yes, the Chinese.
The Chinese guy who draws his strength from the power of the Chinese people. And because there are so many of them, he is super strong.
Yes. How about then Vindicator or Guardian?
There are a number of you know,
Canadian,
like the Canadian one.
Yeah.
The costume is great. Like, a lot of the patriotic ones have really great costumes.
Oh, the Maple Leaf?
I love the Maple Leaf costume.
It feels a little.
The Maple Leaf costume, the Union Jack costume.
Yeah.
They've got good costumes.
Yeah.
But Vindicator, Guardian, they are fairly kind of bland, you know, superheroes. No, the other one that I want to talk about was Shamrock.
No, you don't want to talk about
Irish.
Shamrock.
Yes, I do. Because.
Couldn't you say Banshee was a patriotic hero?
No. But Shamrock, I would.
Okay.
Because her origin, I just love because it is so steeped in awfulness. Because she
is what we love more than anything else on this show.
So she's the daughter of a militant IRA member.
Check.
Who, of course, gets her powers.
Tell me it's from drinking.
No.
Oh.
No, even
potatoes?
Better.
Potatoes?
No.
She is a vessel for the displaced poltergeists and souls died as innocent victims of war. And so they can either cause her good luck.
Yeah.
Or bad luck for her opponents.
Nice.
So she literally is a vessel for the spirits of the Irish dead that give her the luck of the Irish.
Literally Lucky Charms.
Yeah.
Like if Lucky Charms were
so,
a superhero.
So terrible.
That's what it would be.
The other one that I kind of adjoined was Sabra.
Yeah, the Israeli.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I never understood, like, because she's got, like, the power to produce, like, these energy quills. And I never really understood,
Sabra.
I discovered why.
No, please, no.
Because Sabra.
No, stop.
No,
I think
no.
We should just pull the plug.
No, this is good.
No, it can't be.
Sabra has two meanings.
Yes.
It means native of Israel.
Does that mean hummus?
No. It is also a kind of prickly pear. And that is why I think she shoots.
Wait, she's named after a prickly pear?
She's named after a prickly pear, and I think that's why she shoots the energy quills.
I don't
so
think
she
so.
Shoots,
that's,
she shoots how, cactus quills, essentially.
By the power of the prickly pear.
That is, I think.
No.
I think that they're like, they looked up, they're like, great, we've got a name with this double meaning.
No.
We've got the Israeli connection, and we've got her powers.
No.
She shoots like prickly pears.
That's awful. That is.
Energy prickly pears.
That is awful. That is the worst.
But yeah. But yeah, so I just like the internet, all of whom were introduced in the original like Contest of Champions series.
Yeah.
Which I loved as a kid, but
yeah.
Like most of those characters never really sort of went anywhere.
How about Rima the Jungle Girl?
As a patriotic hero?
Yeah, does she represent the jungle?
I don't really think of that as a political entity.
El Dorado?
The jungle. Well, he's terrible.
Yes.
As are most of the Super Friends.
Are awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're called the Super Friends. Like,
they're
not going to be that good to
begin with. The other one I always liked was I always have a soft spot for Captain Britain.
Captain Britain?
Yeah.
Yeah, although like the whole, like, there's a gazillion Captain Britons on a gazillion different worlds got a little confusing.
I liked that.
Yeah.
You're Captain Britain 72.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
I like
one's
all
that? I don't know.
I don't know. I just picked a number.
All right.
But I particularly like it, you know, again, I like the Captain Britain costume. Like the original Alan Davis one. Not the
almost
weird
anything
generic
Alan Davis draws.
Yeah.
turns out to be pretty good stuff.
So what are your thoughts on U.S. Agent?
He's on my worst list.
Okay.
Yeah, do not care. I'm not a big fan for the knockoffs, but a couple knockoffs actually made my list.
Okay.
And then there were a couple I was kind of indifferent to. American Dream.
American Dream.
That's the female Cap.
Oh, that's the one from the future universe. Yeah,
no good.
Yeah, no.
Liberty Bell and Miss America from way back in the day.
Oh yeah, they're
good stuff.
What about Yankee Poodle?
That's on my list. Yankee Poodle was the one I thought that you would most appreciate.
Why would I most appreciate that?
I assume that you're a big Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew fan.
Oh, no.
You did not read that when you were a kid.
I did not.
Oh, my brother loved Captain Carrot.
Oh.
And the Zoo Crew.
They're all like.
Yeah, Yankee Poodle.
Warner Brothers versions of superheroes.
I'm a Yankee Poodle. They don't know the
song. Yeah, no, Yankee Poodle.
Yankee
who apparently
Yankee
shoots
Poodle
blue stars from her right hand to repel objects and red and white stripes from her left to attract them.
She wears kind of a Wonder Woman-y outfit, right?
She does, like, which is a little bit disturbing.
Imagine a poodle dressed like Wonder Woman.
No, imagine a poodle with the figure of Wonder Woman
dressed as
Wonder Woman, because that's what you've got.
Yeah, I'm Dan's trying not to, but it's too late.
Yeah, no, it's
we
not.
We know what Dan's dreaming about tonight.
Yeah.
Yankee poodle.
Yeah, that's just wrong. the other one that I absolutely hate, and this is another knockoff, is Red Hulk.
I didn't think of him as a patriotic.
Well, because he's Thunderbolt Ross.
Right. Well, he's always an army guy.
He's going to be in that new U.S. Avengers series, which I really don't want to buy.
Yeah.
But it's an Avengers series, and so I
they
really,
know they own
it's
you.
It's like me and the X-Men. It's like.
But I hate Red Hulk.
I should stop. Yeah. Yeah. Yankee Poodle's way better.
Yeah.
She's on my best list.
Oh, she's just on my list. But yeah, the whole like weird anthropomorphic poodle figure. I'm like, that's wrong.
No, it's awesome.
It's terrible.
It's what comics ought to be.
Yeah. So would you count Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel as a patriotic hero?
I did not think of her as a patriotic hero, but I could see it. Like, you're going to take anybody in the military now and make them patriotic?
I'm just kind of wondering if she falls into that realm of a political hero.
Yeah. Well, like, would Dr. Doom be patriotic?
He's a Latverian nationalist.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So, I guess he's not a superhero.
Yeah, supervillain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had some others. Like Captain America is on the good list, I think. Right?
Okay. Well, wait.
I used to
comic
hate
book Captain
America
or movie Captain America?
Because
I would think movie Captain America you're probably better with than comic book version.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, like, some of the more recent Captain America comic book stuff has been okay.
The Brubaker stuff has
been
good.
The Brubaker stuff was brilliant, right?
Yeah.
So that Captain America. How do you feel about Isaiah Bradley and Josiah X?
Oh, I like them.
I do too.
The spinoffs of the Black Captain America.
Right. Yeah. This is where my list got bigger. Like, I think the Truth story with Isaiah Bradley is like a really interesting story.
Right.
That tries to be sort of historically conscious and relevant, and maybe create a conversation about stuff that we don't talk about in this country.
Well, and then you have Eli Patriot and Young Avengers.
Yep.
Sort of his grandson, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And Josiah X, is in the crew.
Yes.
For example, and you know, again, very interesting. Bobby insisted that I put Nuke on the list.
He
does have a flag tattooed on his face.
He is. Well, and he is a
which to me suggests a certain level of commitment, right?
You know, well, like, a certain level of thinking.
Like, it's like his entire.
Well,
his
wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Face,
I think that was done to him. I don't think he chose to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know much about Nuke.
I don't either, but I don't recall that being.
He hasn't had it erased. Yeah. So.
Either he really hates it.
Could you imagine
it,
how painful
he really loves
the process that would be?
So he's sticking with it.
That would hurt. Yeah. So, I mean, Nuke is, again. Maybe not the most subtle of critiques of the Vietnam era.
Yeah. That's comic books. We're not looking for subtlety.
I would definitely put him on the list. The rare moment when I agree with Bobby.
Yes.
I would think Nuke would have to be in the conversation.
Excellent. How about the Star-Spangled Kid?
Hate them.
Love the Star-Spangled
Kid. His sidekick Stripesy's worse.
I did not put Stripesy on the list.
Yeah, exactly.
The Star-Spangled Kid, I used to love JSA stuff when I was a kid. I know I shouldn't like the Star-Spangled Kid.
You shouldn't.
But I do. Yeah. Like, I like Wildcat.
Now, are you talking about the original or are you talking about, like, the Stargirl version?
No, I'm talking about the original.
Okay.
Yeah, the original, like, you know.
Terrible.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. No, never liked the Star-Spangled Kid.
How about Wonder Woman?
Oh, she's definitely a patriotic.
Is she on the list?
Oh, she's got to be on the list.
Yeah. So she was on my list.
Like, you can't talk.
How she's written.
I mean, you can't talk about patriotic superheroes without Captain America, without Wonder Woman, and without Superman. Which
Superman.
I imagine is going somewhere on your list.
At best, indifferent on Superman.
Really?
Yeah.
I was expecting a stronger negative reaction.
Not a big Superman fan.
You're not, so that's why I was expecting more than indifference.
These don't really anger me.
Okay.
How about the comedian?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Well, he's like the Watchmen version of Nuke,
He should be on the list, right? There is no better patriot.
Yeah, well.
In a sense, yeah.
Well, he's totally in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Nixon.
He's also a, you know, psychopath and murderer.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing this show circle.
I know. I see. Yeah. Yeah. I picked up on that. Yeah.
How do you feel about Sam Wilson as captain?
I have mixed feelings of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the issue of the ethnic replacement hero. Like, they're always going to be,
right,
you know, not the original.
Seems like somebody should write an op-ed about that.
Yeah, possibly get that at History News Network or something like that.
Or you might find it on Time.com if you did a little looking.
Oh, that's right. That's the one that was on Time. That's right. Black Panther was the one that wasn't. Yeah.
Black Panther didn't quite make the cut.
No.
Black Panther did make the Chicago Tribune, however, though.
Yes. Black Panther, patriotic hero. I saw him on a couple lists.
Wakandan.
Yeah.
Not American, though, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially in the movie, it shows, you know, he's very much for the country.
Absolutely.
You know,
The coach stuff is a little more complicated.
Yes.
I would say, like, in terms of, you know, the rebellion within Wakanda and people kind of questioning really how committed he is to the country as opposed to kind of the monarchy.
Right, which goes back to the, like, early 70s Don McGregor run.
Yeah.
With the questioning of his dedication. You know, he's too busy superheroing around with the Avengers to pay attention to things going on in Wakanda.
Luke Cage?
Yeah.
Is he patriotic, you think?
I wouldn't see him
not by
as,
nature,
like, overtly a patriotic character. Political.
Well, like,
we talked about the Netflix series. There's a lot of politics.
Well, but
that.
Even if you think about, you know, in the original Civil War series, like, he was very much sort of playing the conscientious objector role.
True.
And again, you know, like, the issue of New Avengers that spotlighted him is sort of seen as one of the better Luke Cage stories that Bendis wrote, in which he sort of is objecting to the Civil War, doesn't want to be involved. And even throughout New Avengers, like, he came in as kind of wanting to do something different,
right,
not wanting to do what the Avengers had always done. And so there was a certain political edge to Luke Cage, the modern Luke Cage.
Right. It is my disappointment in comics, though, that whenever people try to do that, right, to be a conscientious objector, it never works.
No.
It never works, unfortunately.
No. He was dragged into Civil War just like everyone
else. Wonder Man was working on that for a while, right, in Uncanny Avengers. Like, he was going to be – he was a pacifist.
Yeah, he was a pacifist, but that didn't work either.
Which makes sense, I guess, given the comic book medium. But still, you know, would be nice to see one somewhere.
I always had an idea for a pacifist superhero.
Really?
Yes.
And it's going to be a joke.
No. His name was going to be, I think I called him Peacekeeper.
Ah, I like
as
it.
As opposed to Peacemaker, which felt a little bit too, you know, violent. It was like Peacekeeper. The idea that he was that he would not, you know, he would not directly fight anyone, but he would, or, you know, like, punch or anything, but he would sort of use
He would reason with people?
No, he would
like
use, like,
a negotiator?
People, like, he wouldn't actually punch anyone, but he would move around so that people's own momentum would, like, knock them over or things like that.
Oh. Ah. So it was like kind of the martial arts where it's like, you know.
That was sort of my idea, is that he would never, like, directly punch anyone, but he would sort of, like, acrobatically move around, turn their own momentum against them.
I like it.
That was sort of my idea for Peacekeeper.
Does he get his power from the prickly pear?
No.
Because that would be.
No, it's all natural skill.
Oh, Hawk and Dove, yeah.
Aren't they conscious of, like, the way they fight?
Oh, no,
they're all about peace, though, aren't they?
Well, Dove is the spirit of war, Dove is the spirit of peace.
So wouldn't Dove then be your conscience objector?
Peacekeeper would be very much like Dove. Yeah, Peacekeeper would be like Dove.
I guess I don't know Dove very well, but Dove never fought?
No, he would like, if someone was coming, like, running at him, he would flip him over the other way. But it was the other person's momentum that was more responsive.
Or he would throw them into Hawk, and Hawk would then be the one to beat.
But that seems like,
that feels
like a pretty fine line, right?
It is.
I'm a pacifist, but I'm just going to pass you on to the guy that's going to beat your brains out.
Yes.
Pacifist. Makes sense.
But again, Hawk and Dove, not a terribly subtle political commentary.
No, indeed not.
Because you had Hawk, who was like the sort of, you know, violent, you know, and I think the original character was written as a very sort of staunch military conservative person.
Right.
Dove was very much sort of like the 60s youth movement hippie. Yeah.
It feels to me, though, like, if we're talking about Hawk and Dove,
mm-hmm.
we've really reached
– we've perhaps exhausted, like, the
like
possibility.
The bottom of the
barrel. Like, there is no depth.
At this point, we're punching a hole into
I didn't think there was a place we could go lower than, like, Collective Man and Sabra, but I think we might have found it with
Hawk
and Dove.
Well, I thought Yankee Poodle.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, so what you're saying is, like, we hit a lot of new lows today.
We have, which kind of, like, seems appropriate for this election cycle.
In the last 10 minutes. It does, indeed. So on that happy note,
yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Yep.
It's been nice to have you along.
And go out and vote.
Please.
There we go.
Excellent.
Good night. Good luck.
that would have been the ending for today.
Yeah. But hey, that was a smoother ending.
Wait, we're doing the recap.
You ended it and keep going.
Exactly.
Wait, we're doing the recap, right?